This is the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hester. You can usually find me online by searching ATFMB. If you're interested, I will be the media guest of honor at Capricorn with my friend John Anilio. That's in Wheeling, Illinois at the Westin North Shore, February 12th through the 15th. Come by and say hello and see us do a live recording of The Functional Nerds, which should be interesting. Tonight, I want to talk about standalone novels with all the folks I've assembled. But before I do, it's that time of year where I do my little spiel about the Hugo nomination, so I want to throw that out there. Anyone who is or was a voting member of the 2014, 2015, or 2016 Worldcons by the end of the day on January 31st, 2015 is eligible to nominate people for Hugo Awards. So if you are a member or supporting member of Sasquan, Worldcon in Spokane, you can nominate and vote for the Hugo Awards, which are awarded each year at Worldcon in whatever city in the world where it happens to land that year. If you have ever sat there complaining because your favorite book, your favorite author or editor or comic book or movie or TV show or whatever it is didn't get nominated, or if you've ever sat there thinking, gosh, the Hugos aren't diverse enough, and I want more diversity, now is your chance to make that change. If everyone listening to this podcast nominated and voted for the Hugo Awards, it would set a record, believe it or not, and possibly affect the very change you're looking for. So I'm going to throw it out there that if you can, you should go nominate. In the interest of full disclosure, SF Signal has recused itself from consideration in the fanzine category this year. Might change next year with Kristen, never know. But many of our contributors are eligible for awards, including the people on this very podcast. You can check out sfsignal.com for a full list that John DiNardo has kindly put together. I may even put a link in the show notes. You never know. It's happened once or twice before I arrived on show notes that were accurate. You never know. Additionally, SF Signal's family of podcasts are all eligible under the Fancast category. That includes Karen Lord and Karen Burnham for SF Crossing the Gulf, John Stevens, Fred Kish, and Jeff Patterson for The Three Horsemen, and, of course, the podcast you're listening to right now, which is the SF Signal podcast. Go nominate, please. All right, let's get on with introducing everybody. First up, I'm going to say hello to Paul.
Hi, my name is Paul Weimer. You can find me on Twitter and on the internet as Prince Justin, PrinceJVstin. I do all sorts of stuff on SF Signal. I am a co-host of the Hugo-nominated Skiffy and Fenty podcast and all sorts of other places on the internet.
Very cool. And Paul,
yes,
welcome back.
Thank you. I've been going, what, three episodes?
Something like that. Hey, Rachel.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. I am Rachel Cordasco, and I write for SF Signal and Book Riot, and my own blog, Bookishly Witty, and you can find me on Twitter at rcordas.
Fred.
Hi, I'm Fred Kish. I'm on Twitter as Fred Kish. I blog at Bernal Alpha. I'm one of the co-hosts of The Three Horsemen, and in 2015, I am undertaking the task of GAFA.
What's that?
Getting away from it all.
Getting away from everything? Or what specifically is all that you're trying to get away from?
It usually refers to the field of genre that we're going to be talking about tonight.
Ah, okay.
Ah.
Scott.
Hi, I'm Scott Cuff, sometimes writer, very occasionally. I used to blog a lot at Missions Unknown. Unfortunately, it died a hideous and nasty death and has yet to resurrect itself. I will be a guest at Con DFW over Valentine's weekend in Dallas, and I'll be premiering a new story there called Hell in a Boxcar.
Very cool. And last but certainly not least, this is the person who made the most ruckus in the green room tonight. That was Delilah.
That wasn't ruckus. That was enthusiasm.
Uh-huh. And how are you?
I'm awesome. Yeah. I'm Delilah S. Dawson. I write books for Simon & Schuster, the Blood series, Servants of the Storm, the upcoming hit, and I just announced this week my first fantasy sale to Orbit with Wake of Vultures.
Very cool.
Thank you.
So
October, very short.
So who over at Orbit is the unspeakably evil editor who purchased your book?
That would be my new best friend, Davey Pillai.
Who is unspeakably evil.
I have not seen this side yet, but Brian McClellan tells me I have much to fear.
Hey, I'm towing the party line here. This is the information she wants people to know. She's unspeakably evil.
If she that's has, what she wants me to say, I will sing her evil unphrases.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So I just
on the phone today, and boy, she sounded so evil. But you can always find me at whimsydark.com. I've got events coming up: Dahlonega Literary Festival, Phoenix Comic Con. I just got into Gen Con, Writer Symposium, and I also give a lot of writing advice and teach at Lit Reactor.
And don't tell me, but what it stands for. But have you ever told people what the S stands for in Delilah S. Dawson?
No.
No,
we don't.
Have you ever held a contest for people to just guess?
I have not, because innocent people could be harmed through this knowledge.
I'm just saying, Facebook meme.
Oh, yeah.
I think it stands for something.
Serpentine. Good job, Scott.
It stands for serpentine.
And did anybody happen to see the photograph that I posted on Twitter of the Yoda Cthulhu?
No.
Go back and look. My cousin, actually my aunt and uncle got a 3D printer, and my cousin went a little crazy and ended up making this octopus Yoda Cthulhu thing. So it's kind of cool. Anyway, so tonight we're going to talk about standalone novels. And we had a discussion beforehand of what is a standalone novel. We're basically saying if there are two books set in the same universe but that don't share the same characters, those are considered standalone. However, if the books are in the same universe and they share the same characters, that means they're part of a series and therefore are not part of our discussion tonight. So I'm assuming that you guys have all put together like a couple of different options. Would that be correct?
Wait, there was homework?
Yeah, there was a little bit of homework. So the reason I say that is because typically what happens is Paul or Fred get upset because their lists, other people start naming the books on them and they're like, oh, that was on my list. And then they start scratching them off. So usually people have more than one. But let's like throw out a couple first. Paul, since you are usually the one that gets hurt the most by having so many books taken off of your list, why don't you go first?
Wow, you're being really kind to me. I'm scared by this. Okay, so I'll go with one that might be on Fred's list, and that would be an old book by Poul Anderson called Three Hearts and Three Lions. Did I get you, Fred?
Yes, the author, know the title.
Yes, the author. So he knows. So the author's on his list, but not that particular title.
Okay.
So what is this book about, Paul? And why should people read it?
It is about a World War II veteran who, in the middle of World War II, winds up getting transported to an alternate world where there's a continent-wide war, except there's trolls and witches and elves and all sorts of things. And he has a strange destiny and tie to this magical land that he never realized before. And there's some very awesome imagery. There's lots of exciting action, and it's one of the novels that helped kick off Dungeons and Dragons. That's why.
Really?
Really? It's in Appendix N.
Hmm. So who is the people that created Dungeons and Dragons?
That would be Gary Gygax, Dave right. Arneson, and company.
Okay, so and I wanted to say Signac or something like that, but you're right; it's probably pronounced differently. So you have they actually said that they read that book and that's what?
Well, Appendix N, which is in the back of the original Dungeon Master's Guide and has been printed ever since, is a list of the books and inspirations that inspired Dungeons and Dragons. Tolkien is on there, Jack Vance is on there, and amongst the other books is on there is Poul Anderson's Three Hearts and Three Lions.
See, because I don't remember traveling from another universe in Dungeons and Dragons.
You never had cross interdimensional adventures in your Dungeons and Dragons games?
Nah, probably not.
You are a deprived gamer. I always set my characters all over the multiverse.
I may have accidentally brought some weapons from Star Frontier into a game.
Oops.
And since my players didn't actually know what they were, they may have accidentally killed themselves with them, but that's neither here nor there, and I was not an evil Dungeon Master, no matter what.
That reminds me of the module that has robots and other stuff in it.
What's book two?
Book two. Okay. War for the Oaks, Emerald Bowl. This is one of the progenitors of urban fantasy. It was written in the late 1980s and is set in the city I've now made my home in, Minneapolis. It's about a young musician who winds up getting caught in a magical battle between the Seelie and Unseelie.
Do you remember that hit song about Minneapolis?
Purple Rain?
Oh, really? There was one? Was that even a hit?
Depends on how your definition of hit.
Purple Rain. Blech. Okay, so let's go to Rachel.
This was both difficult and easy, this question, if that makes any sense. I would say at the top of my list, also written in the 80s, Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale.
Okay.
Which I actually only recently read.
Which usually makes it onto a lot of like best of all time kind of lists.
Because it rocks so hard. the reason it's speculative fiction, and the story is told through the eyes of one woman who lives in a society where everybody, the women are kind of set aside as breeders, and the men are set aside to, breed with them, but everything's very very constrained, and everybody's constantly under surveillance because I forget exactly what happened, but I think there were wars and all kinds of crazy things. But it's just a very powerful story about one person's attempt to break through the totalitarianism that she lives in while not getting caught. I mean, it's very 1984-ish, but the big difference is that we're actually in her head. And it's just a really interesting thought experiment about the future.
Very cool. Yeah, like I said, it usually makes a lot of the best of lists.
Margaret Atwood, I mean, I just hadn't read her until recently. And now I'm, trying to read everything she's ever written, but there's a lot.
Do you have a second book?
I have like 20, but anyway, I'll say...
We'll circle back around. I'm just giving everybody a chance to get a couple. Yeah.
Good. One of the ones that I recently read is called Nest of Worlds by, I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, by Marek Huberath. Translated from Polish.
Oh, wow.
Recently from Restless Books. And it is so weird. It's also set undetermined future. Like, we're not sure how far, but it seems kind of far in the future. And everybody is born with a name, with a, like a designation. If you have blonde hair, you're called a white, or if you have black hair, you're called a black. And so everybody is kind of designated by colors, and then you're given a name, and your name actually is the translation of your name is how you're going to die. I don't know. And then
does everybody have crystals in their hand and they have to go to carousel when they turn 30?
yeah, like that. And then every so often, every so many years, you need to move to a different land. So it's like four different lands. And so there's this whole plot going on. And then in this plot, there's a character who's reading a book called Nest of Worlds. And in that book, the characters have different designations for different reasons, and they have to move to different lands at a higher frequency. So if there are four, then the next time it's like you have to move to 12, and then the character in that book is also reading a book called Nest of Worlds, and it's a very
now hold on, this sounds very familiar. To get from one land to another, do they have to like follow the gumdrop path or the ice cream sea?
They're weird Is there a
peanut brittle house?
No, I don't
And a candy
think.
Castle in the Gumdrop Mountains?
I don't think so. It's not as fun as that. There's like time dilation, like airplanes that can fly really fast, but then like if someone goes on a boat, they get to the same place, but it's like vastly different. It's like year difference. And it's just nested, and you finally get back to the main plot, and by then your head is like about to explode in a good way. And it also has a lot about death and how we're all connected to one another, and can you really be held responsible for other people's deaths? I mean, technically we can, because we're all somehow connected. You know, I'm like, you know, the 6 degrees of separation kind of thing. So
sure. Kevin Bacon.
It is way out. And it's not that long either. It's like, I don't know how he packed it all in, but
Bacon.
So that came out last year. So
very cool. Well, that sounds awesome. Scott, how about you? You got a couple? I know you're going to go old school, aren't you?
Oh, a little bit, but not too old. I want to first talk about a book by my good friend Neil Barrett Jr. called The Hereafter Gang, which if you've never read this book, you've missed one of the great treats in life. It deals with a man named Doug Hoover, who's getting on in his years, and suddenly he discovers the great cosmic teenage wet dream car hop named Sue Jean. And she leads him on a trail from Texas to Oklahoma.
You did not just say that.
Yes. And Oklahoma to Neil apparently is heaven. And it features biplanes and all sorts of very odd stuff that were prominent in Neil's life. And as you know, Neil was an author emeritus with the Science Fiction Writers of America and unfortunately died in late 2013. So we're still trying to get his books out to where people know about this thing. It was available from Mark Ziesing's in hardback, and then Mojo Press put out a trade paperback in the, mid-90s. It's not totally easy to come by, but it's well worth people looking for and finding.
Well, I got to tell you, I know people who were born in Oklahoma, lived in Oklahoma, and they would not call Oklahoma heaven. So that's a pretty far stretch for you there.
Well, see, I was born in Oklahoma, and I've lived in Texas for 50-something years. Neil was born in Texas and thought Oklahoma was heaven. What can I say?
Wow.
He was a little odd in a few ways. And go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and so there's kind of a limited release on this one, but if you can find it, it's well worth your time.
It's very much worth your time. I think it's probably one of the 20 best books I've ever read in my life.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
How about another one?
I'm going to talk one that came out in the 2000s. I've got a list of about 35 old school things, but I thought I'd cross you up a little bit here and go with Dwayne Swierczynski's Secret Dead Men. Now, Dwayne is primarily noted as a comics writer and as a mystery suspense thriller writer, but he's done some science fiction. And this story features a character who has died. And he's been murdered, and he's living in somebody else's body inside their brain, along with 8 or 9 other people. And he's living in what they're calling the Brain Hotel. And he is periodically can take control of his host's body, and when he does that, he tries to solve the case of who murdered him.
Wasn't there a movie with Robert Downey Jr. that did that?
No, because nobody's killed Robert Downey Jr. They really should, but, you
Ooh,
know.
No. We don't talk bad about Iron Man.
You can't kill Tony Stark.
No.
No, it's this is a very, very odd book. It's from another small press. And that's pretty much the only way you can find it. You have to go looking for it. And looking for Dwayne's books is always a good thing to do. He's one of the best writers I know and has some of the best opening lines you'll ever run across.
Very cool. Delilah, what about you? You got a couple for me?
You know, the first one is super easy, but picking a second one is so hard. My all-time favorite standalone is The Scorpio Races by Maggie Stiefvater. It is young adult, but it has got that kind of classic, it could have been a movie in the 80s that we'd still be watching today feeling, where it's timeless, set on an island, maybe near Ireland or Nova Scotia. And it's where these, every year, they cull these fierce, bloodthirsty seahorses up from the ocean and train them to run in this race that kind of determines everything that happens on the island. But it's the story of, you know, the boy who has nothing, but the horses trust him, and the girl who's poor and no one likes. And it's like a sweeping love story about vicious, bloodthirsty seahorses. And it's just amazing. For the second one, like, man, it seems like all my favorite ones are older. So I guess, would we count Good Omens as a standalone?
Sure.
Yeah. Good Omens. I mean, it's just, it's one of those books that, you know, I think it's like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You can pick it up at any point and be perfectly happy reading it, in which it has the plot, but it's the writing is just so enjoyable and interesting and strange that it also feels very timeless. I think that's what I like most about standalones, is because you're not following these characters along this timeline or journey to throw away a ring or whatever. It often feels like they could just be any time and every time.
Awesome stuff, Delilah. Let's go to Fred. Fred, do you have a couple books?
I have 10,000 books. Which ones would you like me to talk about?
The first two.
All right. I will start with, since Paul mentioned a Paul Anderson title, I will mention The Enemy Stars.
Yes.
Which is a standalone book. It takes place on a spaceship which gets involved in an accident. They're like on a survey mission, gets involved in an accident. And they have to figure out how to survive long enough to repair the ship and be able to return home. It's one of my favorite books. It's a gripping story, very edge on the seat, very tense all the way through, even to the end. And still surprises me, even though I've read it like 25 times at this point.
Really? 25 times, Fred?
I'm old as the hills, Patrick. You know that. And back in the days of the dinosaurs, we only had like 3 science fiction books, so we had to keep reading them.
And what's number two, Fred?
Well, number two, I will mention, going into our series that is not a series, I would recommend that people look at Ian Banks and his Culture series, which shares a common background but does not share common characters. So you can really go in at any point.
So you went out and tried – you specifically found a quote-unquote series of standalone novels to quote-unquote break my rules.
No. Nope. Didn't break your rules because you didn't state them very clearly to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I didn't.
But you sent the email.
Oh, sure, I didn't. Yeah, I don't know how much more clearly I could say standalone novels.
Well, do they share characters?
Understood.
Yep.
Understood.
So these are things like The Player of Games, Use of Weapons. I think they first started coming out in the early 80s. So you should be able to find not only recent editions, but older used paperbacks if your economics are not that good right now. And they're all a lot of fun to read. He has a very interesting take on the whole space opera genre.
Okay.
So there's my first two.
And let's go back to Paul for a second. Paul, why don't you give me another two?
Okay, so this is the portion of the podcast where I plug one of my favorite authors, and her name is Martha Wells, because I have 2 standalone novels by her to plug right now. The first one is Wheel of the Infinite. Wheel of the Infinite is set in an alternate magical sort of India world where a magical mandala basically decides the fate of the world, and a exiled sorceress comes back to her homeland to find that the mandala is unraveling, and she's probably the only person that can do anything about it. It's rich, sumptuous world building. It's a wonderful characters. It's a character based on a South Asian woman. So you have diversity. You have a strong female lead. You have interesting ideas on magic, and all wrapped up in one book. The other stand The other standalone by her I wanted to plug is called City of Bones. City of Bones is a post-fantasy apocalypse novel in a tier city which is slowly dying as the rest of the world starts to die, as basically a magical cataclysm several hundred years ago is slowly and spooling out. And how do you survive in a desert city where the world is slowly drying out? A group of explorers and archaeologists looking for stuff from before the cataclysm find that they might accidentally hasten things if they're not careful, or maybe they can possibly slow down the inevitable destruction of the world. I love the city. The tiered city is one of my favorite fantasy cities ever constructed. When I saw the Lord of the Rings and I saw how they had done Minas Tirith, although I had read Tolkien years ago at that point, I immediately thought of Martha City. It's like, yeah, that would look kind of like that, except it'd be more deserty and not plainsy.
Did you like Minas Tirith in the movies? Or yeah,
it felt a little constricted. I mean, and the geography is not quite correct if you look at the maps, but it certainly stands as one of the iconic fantasy cities in all of fantasy.
Yeah, I have a role-playing guide to the city
from ICE. I imagine,
I don't remember.
Iron Crown Enterprises did a ton of role-playing books for Middle Earth and even areas which were outside of the main world that we see in the novels. I mean, they have stuff from all the way in the southern part of the continent beyond the desert. Weird, weird, weird stuff. I have a bunch of them.
I remember that. God dang, it was a hardcover too.
It could be icy. They did some paperbacks. They also did a few hardbounds. They were the main people who had the Middle Earth license for years and years. So
they would generally do paperbacks when they split up a region, like Mirkwood was northern and southern Mirkwood. Then they came out with a Mirkwood hardback, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe that's what you're thinking of.
Well, and I've got it on the bookshelf right over there, but it's on the other side of the wall, so I can't quite see it. Anyway, okay, so two more from Paul. That was awesome. Delilah, why don't you give us a couple more?
Okay, I'm going to go old school with The Last Unicorn by Peter S. Beagle.
Crossing off my list.
Timeless, we all know it, but God, it just... Time does not diminish it in the least. And if you've only seen the movie and you've missed the lyricism of his writing, like you got to read it. It's so beautiful. Like I cry every time. And God, so hard to pick. Like when you start thinking back, a lot of the formative books that meant a lot to me. So we'll just have to go there. Watership Down.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I read that in second grade and it blew my mind. So I still remember like, when I first started wanting to write, and the everybody said, no more animal novels. We don't want to read about animals. And I was like, but I wanted to do my Watership Down. It never happened. Had to go with people.
So, seventh grade?
Second. Yes, I stole it from the library. The librarian, it was on the fifth grade shelf, and she wouldn't let me take it. And, you know, back in the 80s, didn't have metal detectors. So when she wasn't looking, I slipped it off the shelf and borrowed it, read it, and returned it. And it was gone.
Yes, I remember the pre-metal detector days in the library when basically they just had a really angry person standing there going, What are you doing? What have you got?
Well, there are still library Nazis. Like, my daughter is also a precocious reader, and they're like, oh, honey, you can't read that. And she's like, I have 14 books in this series at home. Like, I can read it. And they're like, no, it's way above your level. And you're like, Jesus, guys. Like, this is the opposite of what you should be doing.
That makes me so mad. If someone told my kids they couldn't read something because it was, like, too old for them, I would punch them in the face.
Well, I mean, the best thing we can do is just be like, dude, we will buy you any book you want. Like, if the librarian is there for you, we are there. So
that's awesome. Yeah, I used to go and I would go through the library and I would just pick out books that I wanted to go buy. And then I would try to go buy them.
Because then you could love them.
Yes. And other people couldn't write in them or bend them or dog ear them. or do any of the things that drive me up a wall.
It's very rude.
Rachel.
Yes.
Two more.
Okay. Basically, anything by, someone needs to tell me how to pronounce this correctly. China Mayville? Meville? Does anybody know?
Call Mike Cole.
Mayville? Okay. Anything by him, because I read Embassy Town, like, I guess last year, and that my mind, there was splatter from my brain because it was so amazing. And but I would specifically say today, Perdido Street Station, because you've got shape-shifting or dimension-shifting arachnids battling with these weird, like, consciousness-sucking moths. And amidst all this is a scientist who is working on a crisis engine that it's very steampunky. It's wonderful like that. And he's trying to figure out how to harness different forces to help this, like, bird creature thing to be able to fly again, because his wings were I don't know if they were removed or they were deformed because he committed a crime in his land, but the scientist is trying to help him fly again, and then it turns out that this epic apocalyptic battle between the spiders and self-aware AI and these moths are going to need his crisis engine for a larger purpose of, like, saving all dimensions or something, because if the moths break through, or, like, all the dimensions will be messed up. But anyway.
Well, I believe that part, because we have the moths here in Denver.
Yeah.
And when they come out, let me tell you.
They can mess up your dimensions.
Well, they can screw things up, because before you know it, they have lured a certain cat into climbing walls, climbing on bookcases, knocking stuff over, usually when you're sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they're very evil, these moths.
Yes, moths are evil. That's why we need Godzilla.
Yes. So yes, that is one of my favorite books ever, in Embassy Town. It's so hard to choose. Okay. And the other one is, I recently read again, I don't know how I got this far without reading it, Left Hand of Darkness, by Ursula Le Guin. And I made the mistake of reading it in the dead of winter, about a planet that is the dead of winter. So I was always feeling very cold when I was reading it. But again, this interaction between two very different cultures, humans, an ambassador visiting this planet, and trying to establish some sort of, you know, relationship, and everybody's very paranoid and skeptical, and it's, you know, all kinds of political intrigue. It's like, you know, landing in some country and being like, I'm here, but meanwhile this country, you know, there's all kinds of they have their own stuff going on, and then, you know, add to that the whole, you know, hey, oh, by the way, I'm a different, you know, species. It's really interesting, because she really balances well the science fiction-y part of it and just the basic relationships. You know, you can easily imagine this being, you know, two people from two just different countries trying to figure out how to establish some sort of relationship. And she switches a lot between, like, perspectives, keeps you on your toes, especially because some of the names I found kind of hard to remember. I was like, wait a minute, who is that? Is that an alien? I don't know. So, definitely Left Hand of Darkness.
Very cool. Okay, Scott.
I'm going to start with a novel from the late 70s this time, which is Tom Remy's Blind Voices. Tom Remy was another friend of mine who unfortunately died right before he could do the final polish on Blind Voices. So what you have is somewhere like draft number 1.5. But if you took Ray Bradbury of Dandelion Wine, mixed him up with Charles Finney's Circus of Dr. Lowe, and then threw in some weird stuff, you'd pretty much get Blind Voices.
Hmm. What else did he write?
San Diego Lightfoot Sue was his Nebula Award-winning story.
That's the one. Okay. Yeah. I thought so.
And Blind Voices does have a minor thing of a series in which one of the characters actually appears in one of his short stories, a nice thing called Twilla, which appeared in Fantasy and Science Fiction. It was like his second published story. Getting ready to go back to Kansas City for Big Mac number 2 in 2016, which will be the 40th anniversary, pretty much of the last time I saw Tom, which was he was running the film program and a lot of other things at that particular convention.
You know, you don't have to go to Kansas City for that. They pretty much sell Big Macs everywhere now.
Yeah, well, the sesame seeds always get in the way.
What was the wine that you mentioned?
Dandelion Wine.
Dandelion Wine. I thought for a second that was a John... Elton John song, but actually it was elderberry wine. Never mind.
Ah, no, that's Ray Bradbury at his pastoral greatest.
Mm.
You know, as opposed to saying, you know, you take Bradbury's Something Wicked This Way Comes. That's a little darker than Blind Voices gets to be. And then
which was a song in Harry Potter.
Absolutely. Second one I'll talk about is Fritz Leiber's A Specter Is Haunting Texas, which came out in 1968. And it's a story that always appealed to me, where you have a man born in an orbiting space station who comes down to Greater Texas, which has taken over most of the U.S. And as they say in the cover copy, Greater Texas demands greater Texans. So all the Texans are about 7 or 8 feet tall. And our hero is named... Scully Christopher Crockett La Cruz, and he's about 10 feet tall and weighs about 100 pounds. So he's using an exoskeleton to get around. And he's helping the Mexicans, who are all about 4'5", and are being used as servants to these greater Texans, and trying to lead a revolution for them and fix things up for them. It's a very interesting book. It's been reprinted a lot of times, and it's one I just happen to enjoy, and I'll recommend it.
Huh. Very cool. So I have a question for John DiNardo. Doesn't A. Lee Martinez have a bunch of standalone novels, John? Oh, he's not going to come on. He just does the chat. That's fine. Fred.
Patrick.
Couple more.
Okay, this time I'll go new. And the problem with new ideas, new titles, is that I'm not sure if these people will extend them into a series or not.
So,
you know, the suspense is on. First up is Helen Wecker, The Golem and the Genie.
Mm.
And this, as longtime listeners will know, I don't like fantasy that much, or I don't read fantasy that much, but this was definitely a high point of my reads last year. It's about a golem, which is a basically an animated clay monster,
mm-hmm.
and a genie, which I'm sure we all know usually has light brown hair. Yeah, exactly. And they both end up in New York City in the early 1900s.
New York City?
New York City, where they make salsa.
God.
And it's a very excellent bit of world building. A good look at the cultures of the time, you know, the Jewish enclave and the Syrian enclave and things like that. And the interaction between the golem and the genie are also, because the golem's not a man. I mean, the golems are usually depicted as men, like the famous film. It's a male golem. This is a female golem. Hmm. And the genie, he's kind of an interesting character, because all he really wants to do is he wants to work with metals, but he's always being asked to do, you know, stupid stuff like repair pots and stuff. And he's like, I want to create art. So, it, you know, very, very, very nice story.
So in order to stop the golem from destroying the house, do they have to shoot it with an elephant gun, Fred?
Not in New York City in the 1920s, no.
Okay.
And then the other new book I'll recommend is Andy Weir, The Martian, which is being made into a movie. So if you haven't read the book, just wait a while and you'll be able to see how badly they wreck it in the film.
They won't wreck it unless, you know, it's 20th Century Fox and the same people who are making the Fantastic Four movie. They won't do anything bad to it.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's at least one name attached to the film that makes me a little wary. So this is the story of a man who's part of an expedition.
Was the name Michael Bay?
No. Oh. This is the story of a man who's part of the first expedition to Mars, and they have to abort the mission, and it appears that he gets killed while they're trying to make it to the ship to take off, so they have to leave him behind. And he wakes up, and he's got what is essentially a spear sticking out of his chest, and he sees the receding light of his friends all taking off into orbit. So he has to first figure out how to survive short term, and then he kind of guesses how long it'll be before they can rescue him, so then he tries to figure out how to survive long term. The book kind of breaks down for me because at one point they start to add in other characters back on Earth and on the ship that left him behind, and that isn't as strong as when he's just talking to himself and, you know, keeping his diary and complaining about the fact that one of his crewmates left him nothing but disco music on her iPod, mm-hmm. and, you know, trying to make, you know, the potatoes work and figure out how to get fuel to keep his power going. I mean, it's as good as that George Pal movie, Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
Yeah, I've read parts of that, Fred, and what I've read, I've really enjoyed, and good to see it on the list.
Yeah, I blew through it like in a day. That's how much I enjoyed it.
Wow. And John did say that I'm correct that Aileen Martinez does have some standalone novels. So another author that I met at Mile High Con this last year, Mario Acevedo, I believe has some standalone that's supposed to be really, really good. Anyway, we've been talking for quite a while and we've built quite a list. Now I am curious to know what you folks are reading right now. And I'm springing this on you at the last second, so there's no telling what you're going to answer, Delilah. Delilah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, sorry, I didn't hear my name. I just finished... that's not funny. Look, deafness is a problem. I just finished City of Stairs by R.B. Robert J. Bennett, which was spectacular. Especially if you've been in a bar with him and heard him do Sigrid's voice, like, it'll completely change the book for you forever. Currently, I'm in the middle of Red Rising by Pierce Brown. And next on the list, I've got Promise of Blood by Brian McClellan and Half a King by Joe Abercrombie, both signed and waiting. So lots of fantasy right now. But I'm on deadline for two books, so not as much time as I would like.
But sign.
Yeah, yeah. If you are near Detroit, Michigan in January next year, Confusion is a spectacular con if you want to meet a whole ton of authors in their natural habitat, which is the bar.
Yes, yes, it is. Paul, what are you reading?
Well, I just finished an urban fantasy debut novel called Owl and the Japanese Circus by Christy Charish. We're going to be interviewing her on Skiffy and Fanty in a couple weeks, so I had to read her book. I enjoyed it a lot. I don't read a ton of urban fantasy, just like Fred doesn't read a lot of fantasy in general, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. So I haven't actually started something new. I'm also currently on a nonfiction kick as usual, and I've been reading the two volumes are out so far of The History of Central Asia by Christoph Balmer. These are books which basically look at the history of Central Asia. The first volume starts in 3000 BC and ends in 200 AD, and the second one goes up to just before the time of the Mongols. So it's big, wide, lots of pictures, big, wide maps, and detailed information on who the people in Central Asia were, what their cultures are like, and why it's important that we know about them. And I'm just eating it up like a spoon. I managed to talk Kate Elliott into buying a set for herself too. So,
very cool. Scott, how about you? What are you reading?
I'm still reading The Bone Clocks by David Mitchell. I'm really enjoying it, but it's not a fast read. It's, you know, 20 to 30 pages is the max I can get in a day on that. And then I have The Martian set aside here that I read about the first 20 pages one day and said, okay, I got to devote a full day to this thing, and I'm waiting to get back to that.
Very cool. Rachel?
Well, I just finished The Martian Chronicles. And it seems like with every Bradbury I read, I just love it more and more. And that was just outrageously wonderful. Currently, I'm reading The Children of Men by P.D. James. I saw the movie first and I actually liked the movie, so I knew the book would be even better. So I'm reading that now, and that is great, but naps are not happening in this household anymore with two and a half year olds. So reading, there's not much reading getting done.
Makes you feel any better, Rachel, all the folks that I know who have kids,
yeah,
tell me that it does get easier when they go to college.
This is what I hear. I told my mom, I said, when will they listen to me and respect what I say? And she said, don't hold your breath. And I said, okay.
And she looked at you and said, well,
it was over the
phone. When did you start respecting and listening to me?
Yeah, she left that unsaid, just hanging in the silence, you know. And then on audiobook, I also just finished Ada's Algorithm about Ada Lovelace. And then on audiobook, I am also listening to a book about Asia, The Fall and Rise of China. And it is wonderful and spectacular and fascinating. Why I didn't learn about China that much in school, I do not understand. But now I'm catching up, and it is going to be very useful for reading the second installment of Cixin Liu's three-body trilogy. So the three-body problem came out last year, and the Dark Forest is coming out this July. So knowing about China is going to be, you know, actually knowing about what went on there in the 20th century will be very helpful for that. So, yeah, there's so much to read and not enough time to do it.
There is, absolutely. Fred, what about you? What are you reading?
No science fiction or fantasy at the moment.
None at all?
None at all. So, for example, I'm reading a collection of essays by Umberto Eco called How to Travel with a Salmon. I'm reading a book called Our One Great Act of Fidelity about the Eucharist. I'm reading a book called Catfish and Mandela about a journey by an American Vietnamese teenager to Vietnam to meet all his relatives. I just finished a book called AWOL on the Appalachian Trail, and now I'm reading a book called A Walk in the Woods. And those are both books about walking the Appalachian Trail. So this year so far, I'm concentrating on micro histories, nonfiction, travel logs, essays. No science fiction at all so far this year.
No, you read an urban fantasy.
Which one?
An unpublished one.
I know nothing of what you're talking about.
And John DiNardo, what are you reading right now? Still not falling for it. He's not going to come off.
All right. I am reading the third book in the Warhammer 40K Ultramarines Omnibus, the first Omnibus. It's I'm up to book three. I started it over the holidays. They're really good, just like you'd expect Warhammer books to be. They're full of action, and they're fast-paced. And this third one is a little less military fantasy. I'm halfway through. And it's a little less military fantasy, military science fiction like the first two books. It actually, the first half of it feels like quest fantasy. But it's on some Cthulhu-like world. It's really interesting. Graham McNeil wrote the books, and I'm really enjoying them. And you happy? You got me to come off mute. You happy now?
I am. Yes, we're all standing around in a circle like a bunch of assholes. Yes, I'm happy.
That's right, SF Signal podcast listeners. I'm always lurking. Makes creepy face.
And hopefully now John has more time to read. So. I am reading two things. I'm reading the 10th anniversary edition of American Gods, which supposedly has 12,000 more words in it than the regular version because they just let him, you know, put some extra stuff back in as he was fixing it.
It's just all the A's and U's and the's. You know,
And after a couple of conversations with Fred on Twitter, back and forth, and me needing something for my Kirkus posts, I did pick up Warcry. So I've got Jim Butcher's Warcry, which is set in the Dresden universe and is in between two different books when the White Council is at war with
Red Court.
The Red Court, yeah, thank you. And so this is set in between when Dresden has to actually take a bunch of young wizards and go off and fight as part of the war. It's a graphic novel from Dynamite. Looks very cool. So I've got those two things going right now. There was something else I was going to say. Oh, so Delilah, you don't watch TV.
I have a physical TV, but it's not hooked up to anything. So we watch the things that we really enjoy on DVD.
Yeah, see, I'm thinking that we need to get you on Tom Merritt's podcast, Cord Killers, which talks about not just basically living without cable, without TV.
We haven't had it since he was in grad school and we were very, very broke. Mm-hmm. And now that we live in the mountains, the internet is so abysmal. Like the last thing that we streamed was Hannibal because we couldn't wait. And it's like every episode took about 3 hours to watch because it took so long to, you know, it would pause and God only knows defrag and people had to beat rocks against the cord. It was horrible.
Oh boy.
Are you on satellite up there?
No, we have Wi-Fi. It just sucks. Like where it says choose your speed and we're like, we'll pay for the fastest speed. And they're like, nope, you get 4.
Oh, okay. I know exactly what you're using. Okay.
Yep. Now you know.
I do know. Yes, it sucks. It's a step above satellite in that you won't get shut off after you stream one movie, but it's close.
There's a major plus to it, which is that I don't have to pay Comcast or AT&T. And when I have a problem and I call this company, it's Windstream. They are super nice and pleasant. And they're so apologetic that our internet is shit.
Well, and yeah, where you're at, it's like Windstream or Time Warner, right?
No, it's only Windstream.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Anyway, I bring that up just to throw it out there that The Flash is the coolest show on television, rivaled only by Marvel's Agent Carter. So just throwing those two shows out there for you. Does anybody have anything else that they want to wrap things up with, Fred?
Arthur C. Clarke.
What about him?
Love him.
Well, that was going to be about half my list.
Okay. Throw two books out real quick. Arthur C. Clarke, go.
Go. The Songs of Distant Earth and The Ghost from Grand Banks.
Okay. Finish. And are those like absolute favorites of yours or are they just the tops on your list?
They were just the first two on the list of standalones.
Okay.
Collected stories.
Collected stories.
It's collected. Like big, huge doorstopper. Okay. Fantastic.
What's
a Fall of Moon Dust.
What's next for the Three Horsemen?
Probably we're going to talk about an author who is deceased, who wrote a lot of books, and another author wrote an entire essay about one of his short stories that is about five times longer than the short story.
Hmm. Oh, I know who that all is.
I think I do too. I'm not going to say anything. Scott, final thoughts? Anything you want to throw out there for people?
There's lots of great stuff out there. I was looking over the Hugo list, and it's only in the last 30 years that you really start seeing series titles win in the best novel. Everything up to that point was essentially standalone stuff, with a few minor exceptions, but it's all good stuff out there.
What did you think about the attempt to get the Wheel of Time series on Hugo?
I'm going to refrain from comments there.
Okay, that's fine. Rachel, any final thoughts you want to throw out there?
That I have scoured the internet trying to find sci-fi and translation that's coming out this year, and fantasy. And I've only come up with a handful, which makes me very sad. You really don't want to see me cry. So anybody who comes across anything I haven't found yet coming out, that might have slipped under the radar, send me a tweet or somehow send it to me so that
I'll do you one better, Rachel. I'm gonna suggest that everybody on the podcast who had long lists of books, when the podcast goes live, just put it in the comments.
If you have
suggestions for Rachel, you know, just put those in the comments as well.
Like, yeah, I mean, I've got I've got ones from Tor and what's the other ones? Haikasoru and, you know, a bunch of others, but there's just not much, and it makes me sad. So I'm looking for it.
Paul, how about you?
I just want to make a plug that as of the recording this episode, the Sith Game Fantasy Show has started its 2015 year. We're focusing on non-binary and women in fantasy and science fiction, and I'm looking forward to reading a lot of those books this year. Hopefully some of them will be standalones.
Very cool. Who said hey?
That was Delilah saying yay.
That was Delilah, yay. Okay. Thank you, Delilah.
Yeah, my next book has a non-binary main character, so I'm super excited.
Well, you need to talk to Sean. We should get you on the show.
That'd be awesome. It's out in October.
And we'll Delilah, put a bug in Sean's ear.
And Delilah, do you have any final thoughts you want to throw out there for people?
Yes, I have a standalone called Servants of the Storm that is Southern Gothic horror. And also just want to say I have several friends who have books out this week. Mike Cole's Gemini Cell, Chuck Wendig's Atlanta Burns, Sam Sykes's City Stained Red, Karina Cooper's Tempered, and Trent Reedy's Burning Nation. There are so many good books out there this week, and none of those are standalones, but they are all worthy.
Did you happen to see Chuck's Facebook post where he was very, very confused by Atlanta Burns being both listed as YA and as having a, like, warning
mature
on it?
Yeah.
For mature audiences? He was very, very confused.
No, he knows exactly what that is. This is what we get when we have high body counts in our books.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for coming on. This has been a great list. Again, I encourage anyone listening to this to enter in on the comments your own suggestions for standalone novels, because everybody wants to know. Everybody's always looking for standalone novels. It's something that not everybody wants a series. They, you know, a lot of people, they kind of get series tired. So I know people who to this day have not yet picked up a single George R. R. Martin Game of Thrones book because they don't want to do it until the whole thing's out.
Yeah.
You know, I know people who even though it's done, still won't invest the time in the Wheel of Time. See what I did there?
Yep.
I also know people who think that the Sword of Truth series is like 9 books, and that's just crap. It's only 4. Maybe 5. 5.5 at 5.5 max. If you get to Pillars of Creation, or you've gone too far, turn back.
The show was better.
Turn back. But yeah, a lot of people, they don't have the energy for a long series or even a couple series. And so they just want a standalone book. They want to be able to pick a book up, read it, and enjoy it, and then move on to the next standalone novel. So if you have suggestions, please, by all means, leave them in the comments. Thanks to everybody for coming on. Thanks to John DiNardo for lurking and for, you know, falling prey to my trap. And we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and have them tell their friends and their friends and so on and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF and F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic Wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene, you bastard.